Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me again for Meet the Leader. I've bored people with this about how passionate I am about local government and trying to open out our understanding of the roles. But so often, those that lead our communities are the least known about or their motivations understood. And it's not until something goes wrong that we find out who they are most of the time. And we don't actually realise that they put so much into making things happen for our communities. So this month's Meet the Leader is a recent leader, but not a recent arrival to the world of local government. It's Councillor Vince Maple, who is now the leader of Medway Council in Kent. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Nick. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm still not quite used to being introduced as the leader of Medway Council. The kind of memory muscle still makes me want to default to leader of the opposition. So I'm getting used to it.
So you're in opposition, what, for 10 years and you've been a councillor for 16?
Yeah, so leader of the opposition for 11.
Right.
So those have been 11 years of blood, sweat and tears. Not too much blood, thankfully, but plenty of sweat, occasional tears, which led us to the elections we had in this May. And it's a real privilege to be given the opportunity by a community I've called home nearly all my life.
Yes, because you grew up in Chatham.
I did. So I was, people say I was born and bred in this area. I wasn't born here. I always have to declare that fairly early on.
Okay.
I was born in North London, which is why I have an affinity for a well-known North London team that play in red. I was born at the Whittington Hospital in Islington.
Yes.
But my dad was in the Royal Navy. And obviously back when I was young, the naval base here in Chatham, the naval dockyard, one of the biggest in the country. And my mum said at that point, she didn't want to move anymore. We're moving to Chatham, that's it. And I took her quite literally. So I've lived here the vast majority of my 46 years. So Chatham is definitely my home.
And I was researching you last night, and the link to the Royal Navy is still very important to you, isn't it? Because you go out there and you fundraise for veterans. And
yeah, absolutely. It's something which me personally, and actually our council as a whole, takes very seriously. If we look at kind of freedom of the borough, that has gone to kind of armed forces organisations on the whole since Medway's existed. So really important. And say for me personally, it's literally the reason why Medway is my home, is because of that link, particularly to the Royal Navy, but to the armed forces more generally.
Yeah, no, brilliant. So tell me about your life before 2007, and how did you get politically aware, and what drew you to being a councillor and standing in that election?
So I always share the fact that the first time I ever stood for election for the Labour Party, I was 9 years old. So I went to Luton Junior School in Chatham, and it was in 1987. So it gives away my age if you didn't know already. And I had one policy. Labour came third in that election. We came third behind the Liberals and the Conservatives. I think most people, when you're nine, you probably vote how your mum and dad do. So there's no surprise that we didn't win. I had one policy, which was Luton Road, which is a busy arterial road, has got too many cars, so we need more buses and less cars. And that was my view in 1987. And I have to say, that view hasn't changed much. It just shows that sometimes politics can take quite a while to bring change about.
Work in progress. But
absolutely it is. So that was nine. I hadn't joined the Labour Party at nine, but I was very happy to be a Labour Party candidate. I first joined the party, actually. My mum was a big Labour Party member. Sadly, she's passed away now. But back in 1995, we had the Rolling Rose Roadshow, which was something which the Labour Party were doing at the time, working closely with the leader of Rochester upon Medway, as it was then, John Shaw, not to be confused with Jonathan Shaw, who went to be the MP for Chatham, and I also had the same name but different people. And we had John Prescott here that night and one or two others. And I was inspired by that night, so I joined up to the Labour Party at that event at what was now then known as the Central Hall, now known as the Central Theatre in Chatham. And yeah, so enjoyed being a party member. I left the Labour Party for a short period of time, not for any political or ideological reasons, for an administrative reason, because it was back in the day when you didn't have direct debit mandates. So my membership just lapsed. So nothing hugely political about that. I then made a point of rejoining in the early 2000s. Actually, I was breaking the political flow, if you will. Loads of people were leaving the Labour Party because of the Iraq War. I made sure at that point I rejoined. I disagreed with the Iraq War fundamentally, but actually I was of the opinion, well, what's the point of having these views if you can't share it with the people who are making those decisions? So actually I took the decision at that point to reignite my membership. And it was one of those situations where I think my first or second meeting was an AGM. And it's so often the case in the Labour Party and other political parties as well. If somebody is at a meeting for the first time, they'll be given a job. Yeah. So that happened to me. And I went on from there.
Right. And you worked in government as a civil servant?
Yeah, right? So we're recording this on the day that people are getting their A-levels. It's worth saying that. So I got my A-levels and decided I wanted to go and work. So I went to sign on at the job centre. And at the job centre, when I signed on, there was a job to work for the job centre, effectively, which I applied for. So in my entire life, I've signed on once. And at that time, I got a job at the place I was signing on.
Very cool.
So that was quite cool. I enjoyed my time both in what is now the DWP, was the benefits agency at the time, and also in the Home Office, in particular, the passport service. I was kind of a frontline civil servant, so not policy really.
Yeah.
But in both those roles, I had lay roles as a trade union rep for PCS Union, as is now. And so really enjoyed that. And again, I often say to people who are particularly thinking about getting involved from the trade union movement into local government, the skill set you have as a trade union rep, whether that's individual representation, negotiation, looking at specific issues in the workplace, they are absolutely transferable to the world of local government frontline politics. So again, supporting residents with their concerns. Mm. You know, one of the things I've seen a massive increase in recent years is supporting residents with PIP appeals with the DWP. So again, my previous working experience and my trade union experience kind of coming together. So, and I think actually, and there's other examples of that as well, but certainly for the Labour Party, if you've got someone who's been a local trade union rep, I think their skills are absolutely transferable. And I think some of the best Labour councillors we have, not here in Medway, but across the country as well, have got that trade union background, not because of ideology, actually, but because of the practical skill
set.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, fantastic. So in 2007, which was actually economically a bad time, so that was, we were in a recession, but we hadn't had the banking crash. Tony Blair had stood down, so we'd just gone to Gordon Brown. So that was a really interesting time to get elected. What was it like? How did you find your first?
The first election for me, I mean, it's worth saying one of the other roles I had was as an election agent. So the first election I was heavily involved in was the 2005 general election, where I was the election agent for Jonathan Shaw. And in my parliamentary election agent track record was played 2-1-1, lost one, basically. Obviously, I was the agent in 2010, and we didn't do so well that night. So, 2007, I was one of the things, and again, I know there's a real mixture of views on this. I passionately believe that councillors representing where they live is something which I think adds additional value. There are great councillors who don't represent where they live, and they'll do that for a wide variety of reasons, and that's brilliant for them. But for me, it's really important, to the point that when we moved house, my partner Mary said to me, what do you want from the new house? And I said, the only thing I want, you've got to tell the estate agent, it's got to be in Chatham Central. So trying to explain a ward to estate agents, it was an interesting challenge. I don't think they'd had that request very often. So it was a real, so obviously I'd got that backdrop of the general in 2005. So it wasn't my first election, but my first time standing. It was a real privilege. I know some of these things end up being cliches, but it is a real privilege to have been put forward and supported by neighbours, friends, the community you call home, to be their voice and had to have been re-elected now for 16 years, that's an absolute privilege. And as I said in my speech back at annual council, you know, I've been lucky enough to serve on LGA boards, represent the LGA on European matters. None of that would happen if I didn't have the support of my residents in Chatham Central and Brompton. I absolutely, you know, front and centre, they are the priority every day, because frankly, if they reject me in 2027, then everything else stops. So, but actually, it's the right thing to do. And so from my perspective, that's always been a key for me, is that representing where I literally call home, it is really important. Now, that would be a challenge, of course, if I had my values and I lived in an area which hated the Labour Party. Thankfully, that's not the case.
No, and I absolutely agree with you about the whole... It's I found it humbling when I was elected as a councillor. I've only been a councillor for one term. But to find that people actually bothered to go and vote for you, when you see all of them stacked up and you just think, oh, my God. I get
emotional on counts. There's two things. I'm rubbish at being able to count the piles. So everyone goes, are we winning? I'm like, you're asking the wrong bloke. I haven't got a clue. So we have other people who are much better at sampling and all the stuff you do at an election count. But I get tearful. And I'm not, you know, I probably shouldn't admit that, but I absolutely will.
No, I love it.
I mean, this election in particular, of course, we you know, never take anything for granted, not until every vote's been cast and counted. But we were confident going into that count. But it's still, it's the most humbling.
Oh, look, it's what's in that box.
Ever.
The truth is in the box. Now let's go to that count. Let's go to that count, because one of my team thinks that it was a very staged and very clever thing. But you running through the media, running around and... And it was all so brilliant, coordinated. But that was the best bit of fun I had, watching someone celebrating their election win. I thought you were fantastic, all of you, cheering.
Well, that's.
But was it staged? Did you do all that?
No, absolutely, it wasn't.
Oh, so, you see, I knew that.
So there's a couple of bits with this. So we had the eyes of certainly the UK were on us, in part because actually. Less and less councils count overnight now.
Yes.
As listeners to this podcast will know, I think we're now in the minority.
Yeah.
People always go, well, it's great because it means everyone can have a good night's sleep and get up in the morning. And no one is going to sleep. It is hard work, and you know, particularly for the officers and count staff and all the rest of it. And I'm very grateful that they do a great job here in Medway. So we knew we had won, which was great. LBC grabbed me for a comment right at the other end of the sports hall. It's a Medway Park, so great sports hall where the counts have taken place in the last few electoral cycles. And I could see kind of in the corner of my eye, everybody else had gathered on the stage. And I'm like,
without
this is going to be a...
Without
you. Yeah, I'm like, hold on. I need to kind of... be part of that, because it was quite I think the final count had happened. There was still one or two parish elections happening, you know, still being counted, but the main council election had been concluded. So I was running along from one end of the sports hall to the other, literally just to run. And then one or two people were giving it I'm a big football fan, so one or two people were giving it a bit of a, as crowds do, before they pick up a trophy. So I kind of, in the spur of the moment, just, did the kind of wobbly hand thing that some people do before they pick up the Champions League. And again, for me politically, that night was like winning the Champions League and the FA Cup and the Premiership all on the same night. And the fact of it being recorded was just coincidental. There's a great,
but it was a great moment to watch, and a great
local journalist managed to pick it up, and it ended up, as you're saying, it ended up everywhere. So to the point of which now that occasionally colleagues now mock me occasionally, which I'm very happy to accept.
Well, they can mock But, you know, the energy that goes into winning campaigns and certainly after 10 years of being in opposition, what a wonderful sort of moment in your political career to achieve that. So, no, I thought it was great. And the infectiousness of all your group who had all had their own celebrations, some of them for the first time. It was great. But, you know, when did it all sort of go, oh, my God, I am the leader. Oh, my God, it's not his fault, it's mine. When did that moment of the penny dropping of, I'm not the opposition, it really is my problem?
Yeah, so we'd had some helpful conversations, as you would expect. You know, the first rule of politics is know your numbers. So we knew there was a reasonable chance. We had a target of 33 and we got to 33. So we were very pleased with that, you know, that outcome. So that did mean that we were having conversations with council officers in particular to say, actually, these are the things we expect and anticipate to bring forward. In one sense, actually, the first time, kind of, because on the night immediately, it was a bit of a blur. It kind of all merged together and it was all fine. During the day before, we had been told, if you win, Keir Starmer's going to come to Chatham. I was like, oh, that's exciting. That's good. He's been down twice already. Great. You know, Keir's great. Keir will be a great prime minister. I've got no doubt of that. So actually, welcoming him to Chatham, and I think I said something along the lines of, you've been twice already to Conservative-controlled Medway. I'm really pleased to welcome you to Labour-controlled Medway. That moment, it's like, okay, that's a thing now. We're now going to try and sort this stuff out. And we knew, without getting into too heavy, deep party politics, we knew the financial situation was going to be challenging, not quite as challenging as I think we're finding. And of course, you've got that, you know, listeners to this podcast will absolutely understand, you've got that odd couple of weeks between the election and annual council. So of course, technically, I'm not leader of the council, and ours were, for no particular reason, ours was quite late. So it was like the 24th of May. So there was a fair old nearly 3 weeks of this kind of interim period. Now, of course, the previous leader didn't stand for election. He was always clear he wasn't going to stand. And actually, you know, he was out of the country. He said, I'm going on holiday. So it was a bizarre interim period. It was a perfectly fine handover in that sense. But yeah, certainly effectively from about 9 o'clock Friday morning, making that kind of public declaration. And we had to deal with some stuff pretty early on. So again, one of the things the previous administration had happened is they challenged the Home Office around unaccompanied asylum seeking children. So I had a conversation during that first weekend, basically with senior officers going, look, at the moment with the appeal pending, we're in a situation where we might have personal injunctions taken out against council officers. And I'm like, well, that's ridiculous. And it's not something we agreed with anyway. So again, that ability to say, well, we're not in a position formally to make that decision, but our direction of travel would be, we wouldn't be in this position and therefore work on that basis. Not least because, of course, the appeal hearing would be after the 24th of May. So it is a bit of an oddity, those 3 weeks. And I don't think you can change that. I think by the nature of how local government works, you can't change that. But actually, those were three quite odd weeks.
But you started to get to grips with the big challenges officers were. Was there a change in the way that you briefed? I've never asked anyone this. Did you feel that you were seeing, you were given a bit more of the insight than you had previously?
So certainly within... So I think it's fair to say we always had a fairly open relationship with them in opposition, and we were given as much as was appropriate for an opposition group leader or opposition group to be given information-wise. I've been clear, I want to be probably slightly more transparent. So one of the things I've put in place actually is regular meetings with both the opposition group leaders. We never had that, with the exception of COVID in the previous administration's time. And I just think that's good for governance. It doesn't mean we're going to agree on everything, But actually, what it does do is hopefully irons out some of the, because there are genuine misunderstandings in politics sometimes. Sometimes it's about ideology, but sometimes it is just about not understanding something or understanding someone's position precisely. So the ability to have a few more conversations away from the bear pit that is full council, I think is in everyone's interest.
No, I like
So
that.
yeah, and officers certainly in the run-up to the election, we were sharing with them very openly not only our five pledges, but some of the wider stuff we'd look to do as well. And those were very positive conversations.
Now, from my research, and there's been some really good interviews with you in the local media. Thank God you've got really good local media still. There's a £19 million hole in the finances. And you have children's services, so you're a unitary, so you have children's services and you have adult services, which are, for those who are not fully aware of the responsibilities, they are hugely resource and finance consumers for any council. And you've got a local plan that is still in development.
Yeah, so the current local plan. I'm a bit of a tweeter, so I should probably, I don't know if you call it tweet. I don't know if I'm a tweeter
No, I
anymore
looked at
because
your
on
Twitter
Twitter, of
account
course.
last. No, it's X or something like
Yeah,
that.
yeah. So
But I looked at
I don't
your.
know if I'm an Xer. I don't know what we call it anymore.
No.
Anyway, Elon Musk's social media platform, and on there, on the so on the 14th of May. So again, in that interim period where I wasn't leader of the council, but I had the largest political group. We tweeted out and said, actually, it's 20 years today. Happy 20th birthday to Medway's local plan. So yeah, we've got some challenging issues because again, that lack of a local plan has put, I think, some real pressures on the local community.
Yeah, and also on the budgets of the council, because without that local plan in place, you're not able to project forward what income will be generated by income taxpayer that the council taxpayers in the future, will you?
No, so you're right to highlight, and it's important to highlight that actually as a unitary authority, you know, I've only ever served on a unitary authority, I should probably declare, but actually I think even if I hadn't, it's the best way of working. You know, I spend 0% of time in my email inbox going, no, that's not me, that's the other councillor that represents you, whereas every other colleague in Kent could have that situation. So actually I'm a big advocate for unitary authorities. I think that kind of single tier of local government works, but it's got to be with an area that people understand and know. So actually, the good thing about Medway is it's big enough to be strategic, but small enough to care. And I
Oh,
think
yeah.
actually our administration has got a real kind of emphasis on that. So yeah, the finances are going to be challenging. I think one of the things we'll probably see over the next 12 months, and again, listeners to this podcast will absolutely have a cognizance and awareness of this. I think, on the whole, again, of both main political parties, there have been some examples where local government finance has gone wrong in recent years because of poor decision making and poor governance. I think what we're likely to see over the next 18 to 24 months is councils. But particularly those, as you say, Nick, with upper tier authorities, but not exclusively. So those responsibilities around care, but even districts and boroughs who basically have got the responsibilities, but the resources don't meet those, you know, even if they're taking fine decisions and reasonable and fiscally responsible decisions, the resources just don't cover what's required. So I have said, I think actually there's a need for a new deal. For local government as a whole. And I think Medway is not unique in that. Our colleagues across the border in Kent, of course, they've been on the record recently too. So look, I think this changes the debate around local government governance, but also the financial envelope that we collectively work within. Because ultimately, if you have those responsibilities, you know, for our most vulnerable residents, our elderly, our children, you know, those are not things that you can do on the cheap because actually the system wouldn't let you, even if you wanted to, which we wouldn't, you wouldn't be able to. But actually, we are ending up in a situation where I think councils will be risking financial difficulties, not because of poor decision making, just because the resources don't meet the pressures.
Yeah, and you've set yourself, and I understand why you do it as well. In the election, you were very clear that you wanted to keep the council tax as low as the lowest in Kent. And you've got, and actually, God, blimey, I wish some councils could do this, the free bulky refuse service to deter fly tipping, because fly tipping is a horrendous issue. So you've set yourself some really big challenges there economically. What's your vision, Vince? You've now got control. What's your vision and your group's vision of how you're going to achieve all this?
So I think it's around... Some of it is around taking difficult choices. I think the previous administration shied away from that a bit. And actually, that's left us with a situation where, again, for the financial outturn we had for the financial year just gone, they ended up using £11 million of reserves to balance those books. Now, again, we've only, as is on the record, we've only got £10 million of general reserves left. And as we're recording this today, a £17 million gap. So that's a challenge. Yeah. So we will have to take some difficult decisions. We've been clear with the people of Medway when we went to them in May and said, look, we know the finances will be tough. We didn't know the exact details. We do now. So that means we're going to have to take some difficult decisions. We will consult a bit more as well with the residents here, because actually that's something which was missing in the past. I accept entirely that if you do a consultation with most communities, actually things like adult social care and children's social care in their list of priorities, unless they're directly receiving the services, may well not seem like a high priority to them. But of course, we've got to take that overarching view of our community. So what does all of that look like? One of the things for me is around pride in our community. On Twitter, again, I use the hashtag proud to be Medway all the time. And of course, as leader of the council, if I'm not proud of this place, well, why would anybody else be? Is Medway perfect? No. Is any community perfect? No. But actually, is it amazing? Has it got amazing people who've got, you know, 285,000 different stories that make a brilliant collective? Absolutely, it does. But actually, it's about trying to increase and enhance that civic pride. So that's why actually one of the pledges around the town centres and decent jobs, that's really important to us, because actually we know it's important to residents across the towns. So I said to people on the doorstep in the run up to May the 4th, if you don't feel, and it's a feeling, isn't it? Quite often, rightfully in politics, we talk about data, statistics, milestones, key performance indicators. But actually for the residents out there, when they go to put a cross in a box, it's how they feel. And actually, I want them to feel more proud of Medway in 2027 than they do right now. And that will be challenging in any set of circumstances, but that will be even more challenging with that financial backdrop that we currently face.
Well, you're right, because all governments, do you feel better off today than you did 5 years ago? And that's exactly the same comment that you're making. One of the things that's also interesting about Medway is that you've got the Chatham, the dockyards, which are fantastic. But Rochester is so hugely famous and historical. You've got such character, variation of characters of the communities that you serve. Do you think that's, you make the most of that? And is that something that you want to look at more?
So back in 2012, when we went for one of our many unsuccessful attempts to become the city of Medway, we had two bits of main feedback from the decision-making panel. One was around, we didn't really have a city centre. And I think, to be fair to the previous administration, they've got that. So Chatham has effectively become a city centre in all but name, because we're not a city. But interestingly, the panel also said, don't forget about the component parts. So we had a session with Kent ambassadors, myself and the new chief executive, Richard Hicks. We had a session with them. They tour around Kent to see what's going on. So we were really pleased to welcome them, I say, in our collectively our first 100 days for both of us. Although Richard's been a brilliant council officer here for more than two decades. So although he's new to this job, he's certainly not new to Medway. Right. Actually, it's in some of it's around identity. So, and some of it's around when people have moved to the area. So if you speak to people perhaps who have moved here from another part of the country, part of the world, wherever it might be, in the last 5 years, ask most of them where do they live. Most of them will say, I live in Medway. And actually, for younger people, people who are under 20, most of them will say, we live in Medway. For a big chunk of people in the middle, they absolutely will identify with the town that they live in. So they'll say, we live in Chatham, or we live in Gillingham, or Stroud, Rochester, or Raynham, or indeed, actually, some of the suburbs that sit underneath that. And my point of view on this is clear. That's okay. It's okay to have that kind of multiple identity in the same way that you can be, but where was I born? I was born in Islington, but I was born in London. And that's okay. You can be both of those things. And in a similar way, you can be from Twiddle, which is a small kind of slightly bigger than an urban village, really, these days. You can be from Twiddle, which is part of Gillingham, which is part of Medway, which is part of Kent. And actually, I'm not, we're a unitary authority. So, of course, lots of people were here, Kent and Medway. But we are, as I often say, the 16% of Kent that's not in Kent. But of course, we are in Kent. And for some people will still see themselves, because the world of local government is not the highest priority for every person who lives here. So funny enough. So actually, for lots of people, they will say, well, I live in Kent. And
Yeah.
that's, and all of those answers are the right answer. And we should be relaxed about that. I think the previous administration, and again, it's not all about them because they are not here anymore, but they were too focused on the only way is Medway, and actually forgetting the component parts that make Medway up. And I think that's something which I think was a mistake, actually. You've got to take people on that journey of, you're improving your community, but you kind of need to respect what people see as their community if you're going to help them to improve it. And for some people, it will be Medway. For others, it will be Chatham. It will be Luton, not to be confused with the place in Bedfordshire.
No.
So from that perspective, that's
Although,
and
as a
all of that
football
is
lover,
fine.
Luton has got a Premier League team, so,
They have, which is always slightly confusing because I say I went to Luton Junior School, but it's got nothing to do with Bedfordshire.
Looking now, you've spent 10 years in the wilderness training and learning ready for this day. For those that are in opposition, what would you say to them?
So one of the things I will miss is actually for the last few years, I've done some really enjoyable work as kind of supporting those in opposition. There's two or three things. Number one, pick your battles. Whatever party rosette you're wearing and whatever party rosette the administration you're up against is wearing, of course, you disagree with lots that they're going to do because that's the nature of politics. But you can't fight on every battle. So choose your battles wisely. Officers are not the enemy. I get frustrated when I hear, not again, not here in Medway particularly at all, but elsewhere in the country, that somehow the major problem for you as an opposition group is that officers are carrying out the will of the administration. Well, of course, council officers, they are different to civil servants in the fact that they're here to serve the whole council, but of course, they're also here to deliver the administration's priorities. That's a good, because they are the de facto priorities of the council. So council officers are not the enemy. The media are not the enemy either, because sometimes the reason that you're in opposition is because that dastardly local paper or blog just won't publish your thing. And engage with people, make yourself available. Now that's different for different people, but actually, being around, being available, dare I say it, occasionally getting in the way in a nice way, is all of that thing, because it's about saying, actually, I'm here and I care and I matter. And I'm here to be the voice for the communities I represent. But equally, don't be afraid of saying, I agree with the administration. That's really powerful. Loads of times I've had, in fact, not so much since May the 4th, thankfully, but certainly in opposition, I had both for national and local politics. Why can't you all just work together? And actually, as listeners to this will know, in lots of occasions, that absolutely happens. I think some of the best working we ever had was on a genuine cross-party basis at the start of the COVID
Yes.
pandemic. The leader of the council, who wasn't me at the time, of course, he still took some decisions, but actually there was genuine dialogue, genuine interaction with officers, opposition councillors, and the administration. And where you're kind of standing collectively against something. So again, the best example of that, and I'm sat here looking across the River Medway now, obviously Boris Johnson had some early work before he was Prime Minister. And one of those was when he was Mayor of London, was the attempt to put an airport in our river, bluntly. So actually there was absolute cross-party unanimity. And actually, because it happens, not all the time, but when it does happen, it's a really powerful message. And actually for local residents, because we're quite a politically charged council. Not every, you know, every council's got its own ethics and ethos and way of working. But absolutely, when the opposition group and the administration come together and say, we all think this is terrible, or equally, we all think this is amazing. You know, in opposition, we always supported the city status bids. We think it's a good thing for Medway. We didn't do it for the sake of it. We did it because it was the right thing to do. So, yeah, pick your battles, but also don't be afraid to work with the administration when there are issues you agree that, you know, it's okay to agree with your political opponents. That's not a bad thing.
Well, on that note, this has been a brilliant opportunity to hear someone who's had 10 years of learning a craft and has now got the chance to lead their community. Vince, I wish you the very best of luck with all your group. And you've got an interesting time ahead with all the rest of the
scenario. That is one way of putting it. That is one way of putting it.
With all the other things going on. But Medway has got someone who clearly loves it and is part of the... It means the world to you. So thank you for sharing your thoughts about being a leader with me.
Thank you very much for the time, and to lots of new council leaders in the future, hopefully learning, if nothing else, that you don't have to start at 9 years old and be worried about buses.
Thank you.